What's up, guys? This is Mike Cashew, and you're listening to the Brute Strength Podcast. This week, I interviewed Julian Pinot of Strong Fit. Julian works with a lot of top-level CrossFit athletes, including all CrossFit Invictus athletes. He specializes in movement patterns, fixing asymmetries and imbalances, and he's become hyper aware of the most common ones that CrossFitters and weightlifters have. So in this episode, we talk about how to assess yourself, how to fix those imbalances, as well as looking at principles before methods and kind of a totally different way of looking at coaching in general. This one's packed full of knowledge. Hope you enjoy the show.
We are live.
Awesome, man. How are you?
Good. How about you?
Very good. Thank you. I'm very excited. Why don't we start off by telling people a little bit about you and what you specialize in?
Okay, so I started as an athlete very young. Like I think I started at a very when I was what, like 10 years old. I think I started to play soccer at the national level, and been trying to do sports at a highest level possible for me anyway, since then. So I've been like a sports journeyman, if you want. I was state champion in different sports. And then, but my passion has always been coaching. I found MMA when I was like 18 or 19. And right away, my coach got me to train train everybody with exercises on the physical side of it. And so I guess my career always been as a coach. Like, that's always what I wanted to do in life, as being a coach. And I'm a strength coach, but I specialize as a movement specialist, in the sense of I fix people. That's mostly what I try to do. And so right now I have powerlifters, strongmen, and a lot of CrossFitters. And so they come to me usually because they're hurt, about to get hurt, or stuck in their performance. And so my specialty really is in this, is in make sure I fix imbalances so they can go out there and perform in their sport.
And you work with CrossFit Invictus, yeah, and athletes like Lauren Fisher, Valerie Volbrol, some really, really top-level athletes, right?
Yeah, Maddie Myers, the entire Invictus team. I have a few masters athletes also, right. Tina Angelotti and Trixie Arya. So I have a lot of high-level CrossFitters coming to me because the volume of the sport is creating certain damage and everything. And so I try to keep them as balanced as possible so they can go out there and perform week in, week out.
Right, right. So I find this interesting. You competed yourself at a very high level, and it sounds like a good bit of individual sports. And when I think of individual athletes, I tend to think of them as more self-centered, and, you know, not always a bad thing, but tend to be more self-centered and not focused on other people. But I heard you say in another podcast, I think it was the Barbell Shrug podcast, that you're a humanist,
yes,
right? And you care more about helping others and fixing others. And you, like you just said, you always love being a coach more than an athlete. Where do you think that comes from?
Well, first of all, it impacted my career as an athlete because it's very, very hard to be a coach and a successful athlete at the same time. That's it's very, very hard. It's not the same mindset at all. It feels like it's almost a different part of the brain that's working. So I've always been more attracted of being a coach. But honestly, that comes from who I am. I've always been a humanist at heart. Since I'm a kid, like philosophy, I have a very classical education. I read a lot about philosophy growing up, things like that. And so that's who I am as a person first, is I am a humanist. I always want to better humankind since a very, very early age. So I've always enjoyed being strong and training like that. But I competed because I wanted to be able to train harder. And competition allowed me, give me a focus for my training. But for me, it was never about, I hate losing more than I like winning. It wasn't so much about winning competition. It was just giving a focus to my training because I enjoy pushing myself tremendously hard. And thank God I've done that, because that allows me to have a good perspective when it comes to the athletes that I that I coach. I'm one of them, so it allows me to understand them better. But honestly, at heart, I'm a coach way before I am an athlete, and always been. That's just who I am, I guess.
So do you see that, or I'm sure you do, what other ways does that manifest in your life, this humanistic nature of yours?
I try to understand, in order to help people, obviously, you have to understand people. So that has led me to move to different countries. So I moved out of France when I was 14 and I went to live in Africa. That gave me the travel bug in a way. And so since then, I've been traveling a lot. I went back to Europe, where I lived in different countries, came to the States, from there went to Brazil, came back here. Now I'm going to do some seminars back in Europe this summer. From there, I want to go to Australia. I want to meet as many people as I can and learn about human nature as much as I can. So it's always pushed me in my reading. That's why a lot of the stuff that I talk about when it comes to training is not really necessarily training related. It's not about, you know, periodization or things like that. It's more about life itself. I mean, because that's really what I read about mostly is things that touch humans, like things about from philosophy to engineering to things like that. I try to learn as much as I can about humans. And so I'm a huge nerd when it comes to stuff like that, but not necessarily pure training. That's why a lot of this, I always say that I want to tell people how to do things, not what to do. I'm not interested in doing periodization. That's why online programming. I don't want to tell people what to do. I want to tell them how to do it. I want to tell them why to do it so they can figure things out for themselves. It's Nietzsche who said that he did not like humans. I mean, it works better in French, but like I'm trying to better the human race, if you want. So telling one person what to do is give them a fish, right? I'm trying to teach everybody how to fish.
Right.
That's really my goal in life. So I try to expand my horizon as much as I can to be able to communicate those kinds of things better.
I absolutely love that. What is your go-to book that you recommend or give, philosophy book that you most recommend or give away?
The one that, I don't know if I can give that one away, but I will tell the one that touched me the most was Thus Spoke Zarathustra from Nietzsche. I read it when I was about 18, and at the time when I read it, I felt he was talking to me directly. I don't know if you ever had that experience with a book, but where you feel like every page the guy is talking to you. Like he wrote that book for you, basically to talk to you directly. And when I read that book, that's how I felt. Like every sentence, every page was I don't know, like an opening into my own head. Like, yes, I understand. Like, I understood exactly what he meant and everything. So that book taught me, I mean, it touched me tremendously and taught me a lot. So that's really one of the turning points of my life is when I was 18, 19.
Awesome.
Yeah, Nietzsche was a huge influence of mine. And so,
what was the name of that again?
Thus Spoke Zarathustra. It's his. It's the last book he wrote. It's crazy because he was dying of syphilis at the time, and he wrote that book in like 4 weeks. There's a crazy story behind that book also. And to me, it's the book that touched me the most was that one.
I love that, and I absolutely know what you're talking about with in regards to a book feeling like it's speaking directly to you. The one that jumps out at me is Man's Search for Meaning, Viktor Frankl. You know the book?
Yes. Yeah.
That I read that at really just the perfect moment. It was the darkest kind of period of my life, and it put my entire life in an entirely different perspective. So I definitely know what you're talking about.
Yeah, books are humans' greatest invention. Like, there's so much power contained. It's such a small thing. It's insane how, to me, it's the greatest invention. And unfortunately, I'm not smart enough to, not good enough to write something like that. But I figure maybe I can help. I can return the favor a little bit. You know, what books did for me, I want to do for mankind at least a little bit.
Right. That's great, man. I love it. I've heard you say that you try to teach principles yeah. over methods, and you've already started to touch on that today. Can you explain that, and what are some of your principles that you try to live by and coach by?
Yes, it was. If you look, a lot of the great minds, the geniuses of this world, like if you look at Isaac Newton, if you look at Einstein and everything, their greatest capacity was to have very, very complicated ideas. They were able to put those very, very complicated ideas into very simple questions. Like, you know, Newton with the apple that fell from the tree, Einstein with the guy in the elevator. Like, I don't know if you're familiar with this, but Einstein was explaining mm-hmm. gravity by putting someone in an elevator and then the guy falls. Right. And so if you look from the concept of being the elevator, there is no gravity there. So he created an entire idea that gravity and accelerations are the same thing. And that's how he created some of his greatest work was based on this. That's how relativity mm-hmm. came about. It was from very, very simple ideas. Right. So that's where the true power is correct. If you apply the correct principles, you can go as far as you want. Like it was Ralph Emerson who said there is a million methods out there, but very few principles. A man who understands the principle can make up his own method, whereas a man who follows method without understanding principles will always run into trouble. So that was right. A quote that always resonated with me.
When it gets tested, you can't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go. Keep going.
Yeah, no, so it was that idea. And then for pure coaching, one time I read, it was a business lecture from Charles Munger. Charles Munger is Warren Buffett's right-hand man. And I forget the name of the firm every time. But and he had a business lecture at USC. I think it was 1982, 1984. And he was explaining that in order to invest money, when they looked at a firm, he had what he called his point of elementary worldly wisdom. He had like 20 points he looked at whether or not they were going to invest in a company. And all 20 points had nothing to do with finance. It was crazy. None of them were finance wow. related. They had to do with life things like critical mass or psychology mm-hmm. or math or physics or stuff like that. And so that was... From a coaching perspective, that was fascinating because I was like, to me, that's how it works. I mean, like, if it works, whatever works for life will work for training. So mm-hmm. I follow principles that are not necessarily training principles, but more like life principle. For example, like the idea of critical mass, you know, like every component has to be within a certain percentage of each other to get a self-sustaining reaction. So that works really well for mm-hmm. training. No, I mean, so I started coaching like this with that idea of critical mass, which was very important because it was an idea of balancing everything. You know, like you can't have, for example, like with numbers, you can't have a super high squat. If your squat is 50 pounds higher than your deadlift, then you're not balanced. There's a problem somewhere. Chances are that problem is going to turn into an injury or at least a lack of performance. So it is a mm-hmm. problem. So the idea was to be able to balance the athletes. And so to give a simple analogy, imagine there's an elevator shaft, right? And in that shaft, there's a box. The box represents, the shaft represents performance, right? The higher you go on performance, you go in the shaft, the higher your performance. So imagine there's a box inside that shaft, right? So the box represents you. You're sitting on top of the box. The higher I can make that box go, the better your performance. In order for the box to go higher, I need to put... fuel in it. The fuel is stress, is what is called hormesis, which is a favorable response to stress. So the more mm-hmm. stress I can put into the box, the higher the performance goes. If I put too much stress for the box goes down, here goes performance. So the key was to find a balance between the amount of stress I can put in the box and the size of the box. And the size of the box was something called that I refer to that is homeostasis, which is really balancing the athletes. So I have in the entire system based on the stress has to be relative to the size of the box, which is really how balanced the athletes are. And so when I have those two together, that was the principle of critical mass. So when I look at an athlete, I'll always look at how balanced that athlete is. And so I base that after, like, the size of the box is based on different principles. But the idea for me was always to balance the athletes, because otherwise you start to have like small injuries, you know, the soft tissue, things like that. So the idea was balance, really.
Right. And for those who don't understand, you're talking about balance, moving up, down, front, back, side to side, and rotating as well. Right?
Exactly. So that box, so there's four corners in that box. So, and one of the corner is the planes of movement. And so like, if you look at CrossFit, for example, everything is up and down. That's called a sagittal plane. And that's a problem because there is like, there is no more, for example, pulling in the frontal plane. So frontal plane means toward and away from you. There's no movement in that plane of movement. The medium plane is left versus right. There's very little movement in the medial plane. And then transversal, which is everything that is turning or going side to side, there's absolutely none of it. So CrossFit has become a sport that is really dependent on one plane of movement. The problem with that is the body does not care that you do CrossFit or not. The body wants balance. I mean, it took us 300,000 years, more than that, to get where we are now. And nature did it very slowly. And we have certain movement patterns that are built in our genetics material. And we take that and then we go into a sport that only uses one plane of movement. Something is going to give somewhere. It doesn't work like that. I mean, the body does not care that you do CrossFit. The body wants balance, always.
What are some of the most common asymmetries and deficiencies that most athletes and CrossFitters and weightlifters in particular have?
Okay, so the CrossFitters and the Olympic weightlifters are actually very close to each other in this. The main thing that I see is the... They all have a shoulder problems. So there's two levels to that. First of all, it's the left versus the right, because everything in Olympic lifting and CrossFit is...
bilateral.
Yeah. And so that creates always an imbalance between the strong side and the weak side. And that's a big problem. And then after that, it's the lats are not strong enough. The reason is even the pull-ups in CrossFit now are butterfly or kipped. So the range of motion of the lats is not correct. Like under tension, I've always noticed that the range of motion of the lats is short. Like if you put your arm overhead, the lat cannot stay engaged while the arm is perfectly overhead. So that means whenever you want to control weight overhead, if your lats cannot do it, you'll have to default to your chest. And that puts a lot of stress on the shoulder. So the lack of lat strength, because nothing is done in the frontal plane, and the lack of unilateral movement in those two sports creates a huge problem on the shoulders. And on top of that, because you're not in the frontal plane, so again, away and toward each other, the chest activation in CrossFit, for example, is very minimal. So if you don't have lat strength and you don't have chest activation, those are two things that are supposed to anchor the AC joint. People have to realize that the shoulder is a floating joint. There's nothing keeping it together except tendons. So if you don't have the chest and you don't have the lats holding your shoulder together, you're putting a lot of stress on the labrum and things like that. And so I see so much shoulder problems in CrossFit and Olympic weightlifting. It's crazy. And on top
I think it's more common it's less common for people not to have shoulder problems than it is to have nowadays.
Completely. That's mostly the emails I get. I get so many, my shoulder hurts when I do pull-ups or stuff like that. The problem is the keeping is at the top of the range of motion, you're floating. So the lats never truly have to engage. So now CrossFit is teaching your lats to work very little, because by the time you're catching the tension again on a butterfly, you can use somewhat your chest, you can use different muscles. Mm-hmm. So the lat activation is not there. And that's creating a humongous issues on shoulders.
So I want to keep going with these most common imbalances. Mm-hmm. First, what are the low-hanging fruit in terms of exercises that people can add to their training to not fix, but just help prevent these asymmetries and even correct these asymmetries, and specifically this one on the upper back that we're talking about?
Yeah, okay. So a very simple exercise is the barbell rows. I mean, done correctly, this is a humongous help for the lats. This used to be part of every program since I can remember, And unfortunately, in CrossFit and actually only lifting, they don't do any of it. So the barbell row is a very, very important exercise. They used to call it the squat of the upper body. It's a very simple exercise, but I would recommend everybody jumps on that.
And so then barbell after that, row, we're switching grips every time, or are we always going pronated?
We're switching grips every time, because that's one of the other issue. One of the corner of the box, part of the planes of movement was also the fact that everything in CrossFit and Olympic weightlifting is pronated, you know, thumbs facing each other. Nothing is work with the thumbs facing up neutral or thumbs facing away, which is supinated. So we need to work also the different hand positions. So I do barbell rows pronation, but also supination. And I do dumbbell rows. That way your grip is in neutral. And it also works the left versus the right. So barbell rows and dumbbell rows, to me, are just should be in every program out there. No question.
Okay. How about supine pull-ups? Is that a good one?
Yes, exactly. Weighted or unweighted. Yeah, that's a great idea also. Making sure that you engage your lats throughout the entire range of motion. That's very important also. That's something we can talk about after. But the problem also is understanding that you have to have range of motion under tension. A lot of people are doing passive stretching now with CrossFit, but the key is to have range of motion under tension, which is not the same thing as passive stretching. And so supine pull-ups is a great idea because it will engage the lats. Make sure your elbows stay facing in front of you and don't go to the side though.
Right.
Because otherwise you're just cheating the position. It's not supine pull-ups anymore. Even though your hands are facing you, because your elbows turn out, you're doing something else.
Right. Are you familiar with functional range conditioning?
I don't think so.
It's exactly what you're talking about. It's kinetic something or another, where you're challenging your range of motion through movement under tension, basically. So
I love it. That's what I do. Because I created a set of what I call the openers, which is a set of exercises exactly to do that. Mm-hmm. So I'll check it out for sure.
Love it. Yeah, I'll send you a text after this.
Yep.
Okay, let's do one more. Let's do one more of the most common imbalances that CrossFitters and weightlifters have.
Okay, so what I see more and more now is the inability of CrossFitters and some Olympic weightlifters to hinge. Mm-hmm. I know it sounds weird, and then you would think most CrossFitters, well, they're not actually hinging. They're starting the movement with their quads, which is more like they're starting the movement by squatting. And after that, they go toward flexion and extension of the spine.
But it's hyperextension, huh?
Yeah, they've learned to cheat and to not hinge anymore, to go into. So most of the movement are either squatting or flexion or extension of the spine. There's no more hinging. And that is a major, major issue. And this is why you see the, you know, like the shark fins in CrossFit, like the super developed lower back. That's what you see people with major back pain or stuff like that. It's because the hammies and the glutes are not working properly because you are not hinging. You are either squatting and extending the spine, which is not the same thing at all. So that's a major, major problem on that one, because hinging should be a basic skill.
Right. This is as important or more than learning how to squat.
Oh, yeah. To me, no question. Squatting, it's easy. Hinging is the key, because without hinging, you have no hammies, no glutes. That means you have no stabilization of the feet and everything. So you're putting more pressure on the Achilles tendon. You're putting more pressure on the knees. You're putting more pressure on the back. There is no question that most of the lower body injuries you see in CrossFit is relating to the fact that people do not hinge correctly. They use their spine way too. On top of it, as you can imagine, flexion extension of the spine under heavy load is not a good idea. Like, imagine what it does to the vertebrae over time, you know what I mean? And then you're going to start.
It increases that load by a lot, right?
Yeah, and you're going to, again, CrossFit is very new, but you'll see, like, you know, 10, 20 years down the road, you'll start to see, like, serious spine issues from just using the erectors so much. You are not, the erectors is not a, it's not a flexing muscle in a way, you know what I mean? It's just, the erectors are there to stabilize, not to lift in a way, you know what I mean?
Absolutely, yeah. We're starting to see a lot of disc issues.
Yeah, of course. Couple of years. Yes, and that comes straight from not hinging correctly. Mm-hmm. And I see most people. It takes me, 3-4 months to get them to hinge correctly. And then, of course, their hammies are on fire when they do that. And but that's, it's taking me way too much work to make people hinge. I'm very surprised at this.
Right. And this is, where is this coming from? Overdevelopment of the quads, underdevelopment and use of the hamstrings. What else?
Yeah, well, it's, you know, back to the sagittal plane, and in CrossFit, they want to do everything very fast. So if you look at CrossFit, because of the choice of exercises, CrossFit favors the pressers over the pullers, right? If you want to be good at CrossFit, you're going to have good quads, you're going to have good triceps. So it favors the pressers. And the pressers naturally, like usually people are either pressers or pullers, not like, you know, 100%, but they usually favor one versus the other. You see that a lot with martial arts between the strikers and the grapplers. And so a lot of people, if you want to be good at CrossFit, you better be a presser. And so from there, CrossFit has, the evolution of CrossFit has led to movement that are more toward pressing. Everything is up and down in the sagittal plane, so that's mostly pressing movement. So the evolution of CrossFit toward the competition and everything is pushing everybody toward the same kind of movement, which is mostly pressing. So hinging is not required anymore in a weird way. For, you know, and in order to go fast, it's a lot faster to load your quads than it is to load your hammies, that's for sure. So on a kettlebell swing, if you hinge correctly, it will slow you down compared to a movement where you would just use the quads and then extend the spine forcefully. That's going to be a faster movement. And so the combination of everything in the sagittal plane and that idea of we have to go as fast as humanly possible is creating an entire type of athletes that are just really, really good at squatting.
Yeah.
And so that we go back to a side program to CrossFit that is necessary to compensate for all this. Like, remember, you cannot, if you look at martial arts, you can't learn jiu-jitsu just by doing sparring, right? Once in a while, you're going to have to work on technique. It's a little bit the same thing for CrossFit. There are certain basic skills and certain level of strength that are required. So we need a side program to CrossFit to compensate for whatever CrossFit, the sport, is not doing. CrossFit used to be a training system. Now it's mostly a sport. So every sport has built-in deficiencies. We need to compensate for those. Otherwise, you're going to start to see a lot of trauma on the athletes. Right. And I'm at the forefront. I see the same thing all the time. Shoulder, no hinge. Shoulder, no hinge. Again and again and again.
So I know it's how hard it is to explain this kind of thing using audio only. What are a few, or even just a couple exercises people can add to their toolbox, as well as resources that they can use to go and find out more about, you know, fixing these issues?
Okay, so, well, for the hinge first, they're going to have to learn to understand what a hinge is, and most people don't. So imagine if you're doing a stiff leg deadlift, right? So your knees are going to be soft, but you're not going to, once you start the hinging movement, your knees cannot move anymore. If you control the knees, you control the hammies. Now imagine if you put a pencil next to your hip. As you lean forward, the pencil should turn, because again, you're hinging at the hip, you're not hinging at the spine. A hinge means it's your hip that is turning. So if you had a pen stuck to your hip, as you lean forward, the pen should keep turning. If it stopped turning, guess what? You're using your spine. So before we go into exercises, because it's not really what they have to do, it's how they have to do it, people have to learn the skill of hinging. And they all think they can do it, and I've seen very people that do it correctly. So I've noticed that people can hinge, let's say, about that spot where their fingertips will touch their knees. Anything past that, it'll be flexion of the spine.
Right.
So learn to hinge until your fingertips can touch the bar. Because if you can't do that when you deadlift, that means you're going to have extension of the spine. So first things first, learn to hinge until you're in the deadlift position. So do a stiff leg deadlift with the empty bar and learn to hinge correctly. And again, with a good range of motion, because your knees by your fingertip by your knees is not enough. Everything in CrossFit is off the floor. And so you're going to have too much spine involvement if your hinge is that short. So lengthen your hinge first before anything else.
Okay. Love it, man. What are some other ways that people can test themselves or test their athletes?
I have a number of exercises that I use. I like the strongman movement because they're very low skill. So that allows me to put most people through it without having to, like, you know how long it takes to teach a snatch to someone, right? Strongman movements are very low skill, very easy. So I like to, whenever I have athletes, and that's something they can test on their own, I like to make them do rope pull. Like, so we attach like 100 feet rope, 125 feet rope to a sled. We drag it in a parking lot, come back, and we start pulling. I like that exercise because if one arm is weaker than the other, you'll start seeing right away that the athlete is reaching with one arm and not with the other. The athlete is pulling its elbow back well, but not the other. So that would tell me right away if one side has an issue versus the other. And then something like the overhead yoke carry, which is a big favorite movement of mine, where they just have to pick up a yoke, put it overhead, and walk with it. And then you'll see right away if one shoulder collapses or not. So I like those types of movement because they're very simple. Like whenever I choose a movement, usually I obey three rules. The first rule is he has to show the problem, right, to everybody. The second rule is he has to fix the problem at the same time. And the third rule is he has to give immediate feedback to the athletes. Because it's one thing to tell an athlete that there is a problem. It's another when the athletes figures out the problem right away on its own. It works way better. Like telling people that something is wrong does not work. No, I mean, they have to feel that there's a problem. So those are always my three rules when I choose an exercise.
Yeah, you, if you're off on an overhead yoke carry, you're just going to drop it on your head. So you have to fix it immediately.
Yeah, or like, you know, like, so I leave the yoke about when they are arm extended about like, I don't know, like, you know, 6 to 8 inches off the ground. If you're uneven, one side will touch. And a lot of time you'll see that the yoke actually, when the shoulder is bad, will face at like 45 degree angle. Or like they'll feel like they're walking sideways, you know, like they're taking more step toward the left than toward the right. But they'll see themselves that they are not even. And so that's very important that the athletes has an immediate feedback from an exercise. And so it's the same thing with the sandbag carries. I love that exercise. It's very low skill. Just pick up a sandbag and start walking with it. And you'll see a lot of people that cannot have like a triple extension, if you want, where everything is lined up. They need to lean forward because their glutes cannot take the pressure. So as soon as they get tired, they want to round their back and go forward. And I tell them to stand tall, just everything aligned, and they have a very, very hard time doing that. And so right away, it'll show you a problem with your glutes. Then after that, there's all the work with the prowler outside, like the sled. I've noticed that CrossFitters have a hard time keeping a good pace on the prowler sprints. Like if I'll make them go like about like 120 feet in 12 seconds, I'll give them like 30 second, 40 second rest. And then I'll do 3-4 sets. And by the 4 sets, instead of a 12 second sprint, it turns into a 15 second sprint. Like their glutes cannot take that kind of abuse because a sprint is a hinge. Right, and they're not good at hinging, so they crumble right away. They should be able to do 8 sets of sprint like that, no problem. By the 4th or 5th, they all fall apart because the prowler sprint is a hinge, and that's a, that is honestly for all CrossFitters out there, fix the hinge. It is a humongous problem, and although the shoulder now is the thing I see the most, I think the lack of hinging will create probably a bigger issue because that's directly to the spine.
Wow. I will. Yeah. My mind is going a million miles a minute just thinking about, you know, the way we train our athletes and is there anything that we can change to start to fix this problem? Because I agree. It's you see it more often than not, these issues.
And again, you will be very surprised with that exercise with the sprints. So I do it usually on the minute. It's easy. So the distance, I like to go back 120 feet, let's say whatever, it's 10 feet per second. So change the weight to make sure that at their max speed, they go right around the 12 second mark for 120 feet, right?
Okay.
And then on the minute, you make them come back and you go like this. You will see that most CrossFitters cannot make it to the 5th sprint under 14, 15 seconds. That's very surprising to me because I've done it and I can get to 8 to 10 sprints, no problem. And most of my power athletes can do that. It's a humongous problem for CrossFitters. They don't have the glutes to be able to do this. And for a sport that has such a high volume of posterior chain, it's very, very necessary. And CrossFitters cannot do it. Try it on your athletes. You'll be surprised at the results.
Wow. And what do you... So is that... The posterior chains in CrossFitters are just not efficient enough and not aerobically trained enough?
First of all, it's an energy system that they don't have anymore because CrossFit, when we all started, when we all did it, it was a lot of anaerobic threshold. I remember Fran and all that. you pushed as hard as you could and then you died in the last 10 seconds. But now that it's a sport and strategy has a part in it, like CrossFitters are very, very good at strategizing, but they're not very good at pushing anymore as hard. I mean, like they push over volume and over like days and days and days. But on one workout on short sprints, that aerobic threshold is not being trained anymore. Like a good example was the last workout of the Open last year, you know, the row and thrusters. Mm-hmm. That would be an aerobic threshold where you just push like crazy and never stop moving.
Very simple.
Yeah.
Very simple.
But I would like to see that for like 2 minute workouts. Mm-hmm. And you'd be surprised, like a lot of people cannot bring the intensity high enough anymore because most workouts in CrossFit now are 20 minutes. I mean, that 12 minute range. I mean, 12 to 20. And so they lack that. Now that I think they stopped training that capacity to go to an anaerobic threshold, which was those excessively intense, excessively hard and short workouts. And so that capacity to sprint has taken a beating. And then after that, too, is just they're not capable of that much hinging for that long. So sprint, you'll see that most athletes will have one foot that turns in, right? So that's the weak side. And they're turning their ankle in, sorry, their foot in because they're trying to press. They're not trying to hinge, they're trying to squat. You know, they're trying to push their foot into the ground because they cannot take the hinge anymore. The glute is shot. So they're trying to turn their foot so they can push off the foot instead of hinging anymore. So I see that with most of them. By the fourth set, they're done. And so their glutes don't fire anymore. And now, of course, if you go toward your quads, you're going to sprint very slowly. And so they all end up in a 15-second run, and then usually that's when I make them stop. And then they start cramping anyway, so.
And then you go back to the drawing board, train it more, get them more efficient at it.
And then we do it again.
Yep.
There is an energy system there that needs to be trained anyway. Like that anaerobic threshold and the capacity for sprints and everything, this needs to be trained in CrossFit.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. And that's it's just the most painful place to be. That 2 minute range, that 800 meter run is just and nasty.
That's what I do with the prowler. That's what I do with all that stuff. Like it's about when I do the harness, so we put as much weight as we can. And then and I'll have the athlete do like a bear crawl with weight attached. And then they have to drag it and everything. That will take you to go 125 feet. That'll take you close to a minute. And it's the most painful thing you've ever done in your life. That's when they all crumble and I take the picture of me smiling on top of them.
Oh, I love it.
Where everybody thinks I'm an asshole. Yeah, that one.
That's great. So, okay, let me dissect this a little bit.
Yeah.
So if we want to get back to training the anaerobic system, the threshold a little bit more, about 2 minute range, we're picking simple movements. What else?
So low
what
skill.
Else are the rules?
Low skill, low eccentric.
Okay, got it. So we're pushing or that for so low eccentric guys means if you're so the eccentric portion on a squat is if you're going down. So we just want to be pushing off of stuff.
Exactly. And so most of the energy, like when you do a movement, 60% of your energy goes toward the eccentric and only 40% toward the concentric. Although there's some percentage that goes toward the isometric, which is stabilization. But for the sake of argument, it's about 60-40. So I want to do a movement where there's very, very low eccentric. That way you keep most of your energy for the concentric part where your muscle is flexing. So that in the case of the bear crawl, it's pushing off your legs. So you're going to keep most of your energy into pushing that goddamn prowler forward. And so you're going to reach a level of contraction in your quads that in your legs, glutes, hammies, quads that you never reached before because you don't have to spend any energy on the eccentric or on the skill. So it's going to be you, the weight, and whether you're going to bitch out or not.
Right. Oh man, I fucking love it. What is one training session of this look like? You're going for 2 minutes and you're resting.
Not quite.
Double
not quite.
Or triple that or what?
No, I go. I don't go quite in the 2 minutes. I'm most for mine go from 30 seconds to 75, 90 seconds usually because of this, honestly, because of the length of my parking lot. If I had a 200 feet parking lot, I go further.
Got it.
But so, let's say it's a minute long. If you push hard enough on a harness, because first of all, I'll make you drag the prowler. So we'll have like a handles and a chain and you'll walk backwards, fully extended again, like triple extension to make sure everything is lined up. And I'll make you drag the prowler with as much weight as I can for like 125 feet and then take 2 minute break and do it again. We do 3-4 sets. So now I took your quads away because you just done a million leg extension with a lot of weight. So now your quads is short. So now I'm going to put you on the harness and the prowler. So now, since you don't have the quads anymore, you're going to have to use your glutes. Wow. And so now I'll make you do the harness with as much plate as I can on the prowler. And then I'll hit you on the back with my stick to make you go 125 feet. It'll take you a minute. And many times people are done. That's it. End of the workout. Wow. Because they'll turn gray. It's a fascinating thing. You'll see people, their forehead turns gray. That's when I know it's time to stop, because they're going to pass out and puke everywhere. But literally, their forehead will turn gray, like, you know, like they're dead. Mm-hmm. And so if the first set doesn't do it, then the second set will, trust me.
Yep.
And so I give them as long as they need to recover so they can give me a good effort on the next one. So if I need to give an athlete 7 minutes for the next one, I will. I don't care about that. What I want is I want maximum effort. Because remember, mm-hmm. that's the point. It's not so much, it's not the conditioning part, even though there is parts of that. It's that they give me maximum effort. So they rest as long as they have to. But then you go back out there and you're going to give me 100%. And again, low eccentric, low skill means you're going to give me everything you got, because you will not be limited by the skill of the exercise. So you'll be able to complete every rep and you will not lose your energy on the eccentric part. So it'll mm-hmm. be just flexing. So again, if you want to go 120 feet, we'll choose a weight correctly, you can. If you stop, it's because you stop mentally.
Right.
So there is that whole idea also about intensity that I love so much, where I'm like, you want to be good? Okay, then show it. I mean, bring the intensity. The line is over there. Take that weight. Go over there with it. If you stop anywhere in the middle, it's because you're bitching out. You're wanting to stop. You're pussying out. Go over there. Finish. Like, you want to be good? Okay, take this, go over there. It's up to you. Not up to me, it's you. There's enough weight. I didn't put too much weight on the prowler. It is up to you whether you make it or not. And so I'm like, then it's you, not me. Now, I mean, so it's not the snatch where you lose it. You go like, oh, I just lost it. What are you going to lose on the prowler? You're going forward. There's no skill. Come on. And so I'll push the intensity as far as I can. And the reason I do it on those exercises and not others is because of the low eccentric, low skill, and it's not, there's no weight, it's not weight bearing. That means the soft tissue cannot be damaged. That means you're going to wake up the next morning, you'll be tired, but you won't be hurt. Nothing in your body will hurt. So that means you'll wake up the next morning going, huh, I could have pushed harder.
Yes.
Know what I mean? So the next time you come to me, you're going to go, yeah, I was a bitch last time, I could have done better. I'm like, okay, let's do it again. So now I'll put same weight, but now you're going to do it faster. Or this time you're not going to stop. Mm-hmm. And then over 6 months, I will destroy your mind, but you'll become stronger. But the key with this is to bring the intensity without the soft tissue damage. So that means no weight bearing, low eccentric, low skill. Mm-hmm. That means, again, the only thing that is going to stop is you, is your mind.
Right. So if you're, you know, to contrast that, you can't just do something super short that has muscle ups and, you know, barbell snatches in it when
exactly
by the time you get tired, you're just standing staring at the bar. Right?
Exactly. And so everything, and on top of it, like once you start doing muscle ups when you're tired, you're going to wake up the next day and your shoulders, elbows are going to hurt.
Right.
And so that's the problem, is that people don't understand the difference between pain and intensity. Right. So we don't have pain receptors. We only have intensity receptors in the body. And it's the brain that decides whether to interpret that signal as good or bad. If the interpretation is bad because there's a risk of damage on your body, then the brain mm-hmm. will signal pain. And so that means the brain, the pain is only an interpretation of a signal, right? So if you go toward intensity and every single time you go into intensity, you wake up the next morning with soft tissue damage, the brain will figure it out. And then suddenly the brain will tell you, okay, this is pain, this is bad for us, and find a way to make you stop. So my goal is to bring the intensity up, but without damage. So that way, every time you wake up the next morning, there is no reason for you not to go further, right? Mm-hmm. So do not give yourself reason not to go further into intensity. And every time you create soft tissue damage, any kind of damage to your body is a reason for your brain to signal pain to stop you from doing it. So you are defeating yourself when you push into workouts that can damage you. That's why I talk always about low skill, low eccentric, and very low weight bearing exercises, because I do not want damage on the body, because the damage will set you back mentally every time. So being tough and keeping going through those workouts where you're hurt is the dumbest thing you can do, because you are setting yourself back every single time. your brain will win that battle every time. So the key is push the intensity in a way that will not damage your body. That way you wake up the next morning, you are not in pain, and your brain will be like, okay, this was good, let's go further. So the only way to bring more intensity is by being smart about it.
I think I totally agree. And I think different people need different things. Everyone needs this threshold training. And some people, they also need the long training as well.
Oh, no, of course.
2 or 3 hour mental grinder.
Of course, no question.
You know, it's two very, very different stimuli. But it's way more common for people to go out on these long rucks and hikes and stuff like that. But to get back to this kind of training, this more acute pain is not as common. It's just it just hurts way more.
But all this is necessary. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying people should do only that. But it happens that my specialty is to fix people. And mm-hmm. I mostly have strength athletes, CrossFit being part of them. And I need to, they're going to compete. And they're going to compete with, in short workout, that require a certain level of intensity. If you're going to do that kind of effort, you need to train for it. In order to perform at your best, it has to be mm-hmm. trained. You know what I mean? Right. And so me, I have a very specific niche of people that come to me. I don't know that I would necessarily train a triathlete as often into that kind of energy system than a CrossFitter. I obviously would not. But pushing the intensity is not just for training. Pushing that intensity is also to teach you something about life. Life is about pain. We go through pain all the time. It's very important to understand the concept of pain because this is something that will follow you in life on everything. You have to understand the difference between intensity and pain, right? If you could remove, pleasure and pain are very closely related because everything is based on intensity. If you could truly know the difference between intensity of pain, there is so much in your life in general, not just training, that could change. I mean, it is such an important life lesson. I've traveled a lot, and every uncomfortable situation is you feel it as painful. But if you can train your body and your mind into that intensity zone all the time and realizing there is no damage, it frees your mind for so much stuff outside of training. Suddenly you can put yourself mm-hmm. into uncomfortable situation in every part of life and not fear that. You'll be able to handle discomfort going like, this is just intensity. Okay, you'll have panic attacks and you realize this is just intensity. This is not painful. There is no damage. This is just intensity. It's not going to kill me. It's not going to damage me. This is only intensity. So my thing with this too is to strengthen the human mind by doing this, to show them that intensity is not pain. So whenever you feel those things, all you have to do is to control the intensity. Don't try to block out the pain. You cannot. But if you can control intensity, then there is so much more you can do in life.
God damn, I love that. My heart's beating faster. I love that so much. That's great. Okay, I got a few more, a little more personal questions, and then we'll wrap it up.
Yep.
Who have been some of your biggest influences as a coach?
My biggest influence in life has been my brother. He was, I talk about him more now, but he was my, in a way he raised me, and he was by far my biggest influence in my life. He was a smart one. He was the smartest, sharpest intelligence I've ever met. He was 18 years older than me, and he died about 20 years ago now, and I still miss him every week. And even though it's been 20 years, that changed nothing for me. He was the biggest influence in my life. And he was someone who was very much into philosophy and literature. And he's the one really who taught me how to read. And so he taught me about life, about human beings, about everything. And so he's been my influence because I look at everything, not so much from a coaching perspective. When I see someone, I see an athlete, I see a human being. And the only way I look at it is, what can I do to better that person? And if it's to teach them that not to fear pain, if that can make them better as a human being, then that's great. I mean, but That's been mostly my biggest influences have been not necessarily coaches in the strength world. It's been people like Albert Einstein or Sir Isaac Newton obviously they gave so much to humanity, but for their way of thinking when it came to very complicated problems and how they found solutions that were so simple, even though like Albert Einstein, people don't remember, but when he came up with his theory of space-time, he was seen as a complete crazy guy because at the time, There was no such thing as space-time. So he changed our view of the universe just by himself. And he did it really with simple ideas as a guy in an elevator falling, or, you know, the guy, what happens, how come when a guy is in a train and juggles, the balls don't fall backwards. So it was very simple ideas that created a complete shift in his way of looking at the universe. And same thing with Isaac Newton. Isaac Newton created calculus in 3 months over a summer because a guy dared him to. He was like, okay, so prove that you're right. Came back 2 months later, he had invented calculus. It's the power of the human mind in people like that inspires me in life tremendously. So whenever I get stuck on something, I realize I'm really, really not smart, and then I should do a lot better.
Right.
And so those have been by far my, but that's, again, it's my brother who taught me all this. And looking at the greatness of the human mind, that's really what pushes me in the morning, going like, dude, you need to do more. So I'm not that smart, but I'm trying.
Right. And all of, those two people that you're talking about, three people that you're talking about, all taught you principles,
yes,
not methods, right?
Exactly. It was all about that, because it's like I talk about quantum physics all the time. I'm not good enough to understand, nobody understands quantum physics anyway, but there's a very interesting things happening right now in the world of quantum physics, because we've been stuck between gravity and quantum physics. Like, they both work, but if you put them together, they don't anymore. And so they knew that the way we look at the universe is wrong. There are certain things we don't understand yet. But again, it was very simple ideas that changed the way we look at the universe too. It always comes down to very simple questions. So that's what I try to do for me in my life, is ask myself the simplest question possible in order to change the way I look at things. So yeah, principles, not methods. Ideas. Now, I mean, that's what changes the way you look at the world, is you have to change your perception first.
What has been the most recent aha moment for you as a coach? And it might have been, 10 plus years ago, but something, a time where something really changed for you, or something really clicked.
There was something clicked, I guess. I was in Brazil, so it was in 2005. And then I met that Cuban guy over there. I was at Baja Gracie doing jiu-jitsu and everything. And there was a Cuban coach who was the strength and conditioning coach over there. And he had, like, every Monday morning, he made us do a session on the beach, which was actually very close to CrossFit. But we do it with a partner where we would, like, squat him on the shoulders and stuff like that. And so you do, like, 9 to 12 exercises, 10 to 15 rep range, 3 rounds, right? So it took us about 40 minutes, and it was horrible. It was probably the hardest thing I've ever done, especially at the time. And but it was such basic movements. You know what I mean? Like, squat the guy, you have to suplex the guy, stuff like that. Like, you have to sprint in the same farmer's carry, bride carries, stuff like that. So very simple movement. That got me in the best shape I've ever been in. You know what I mean? And there was no, it wasn't, what struck me at the time was, it was so simple, in the sense, like, there was no, like, 85%. It was not a bar with exactly 215.5 pounds on it. It wasn't 36 seconds with 20 second rest. It wasn't that complicated. You know what I mean? It was very basic movement done at high intensity, and that got me the best results ever. And so it really showed me that it's not what you do, it's how you do it. And so that's when really I started to focus more on principles, going like, it does not have to be complicated all the time. Sometimes we get stuck into that mindset that we have to make those very intricate programs and stuff like that, where at the end, all you got to do is push the athletes, man.
Right.
Do it, push the athletes, do it smartly, find good ways to do it so they don't get hurt, and just push. So that's why the Prowler really came about and all that stuff. I was like, I'm going to find a way to push the athletes as far as I can without hurting them. That's it. That really, I was like, okay, so how do I do that? And then from there, I started to build the system. But the idea was, just, if you can bring the intensity high enough, you will elicit a response from the body. And after that, it's what the coach Abid Jaef was saying. He said, the greater the stress on the body, the greater the quality of the protein produced. So that really, that meant the greater the stress, the better quality of muscle you would produce. That was his whole idea. And that's why he stressed the shit out of his athletes, because he figured like by creating a greater stress, he would create a better answer. My only problem with this system is that he used Olympic weightlifting, which is very stressing on the soft tissue. So he killed an entire generation of athletes. But the idea is still valid. So me, I was like, okay, so how do I create a greater stress, but without damaging soft tissue? And then my entire system was based from there.
Mm-hmm. Wow. What is something that you believe as a coach or just as a person that most others or all other people around you think is crazy?
In CrossFit, it was the assistance work. Well, I mean, most coaches are there. So I was talking about the box, right? So imagine inside that box, I was talking in the shaft. Inside that box is the fuel to make the box go higher. I call that the circle that fits inside the box. It's hormesis, which is so favorable response to stress. Most coaches out there are circles. They only seem to care about the amount of stress that they put on the athlete to elicit a response. So that circle. Me, I'm a square. I'm the guy who balances the athletes. But the thing is, in order to put more stress into that box, first you need to make the box bigger. So I seem to care a lot more about balancing the athletes and making them making that box bigger than I am about stressing them necessarily. So I pay more attention to small details than most out there. Like when I see a faulty pattern, I will fix that first. Whereas most coaches are circles. They're mostly concerned about stress, by creating stress. Now, I mean, so it's a very, to me, it's a short-term mentality. But like, yeah, but there's a competition going, you need to push, you need to do this, you need to do that. Where me, I'm always taking a step back going like, no, I don't like the way this is. We're going to fix that movement first. We're going to make sure this doesn't hurt. So I have a different way of looking at it because I'm a square. I mean, I'm a box. Mm-hmm. Most coaches out there are circles.
Right. I love it, man. This is good shit. Where can people find out more about you, get in touch with you? And what should they know about, like, what's coming up for you?
So I have a website, which is strongfit.com, where they can see a lot of the stuff out there. I got the blog on there. I have a YouTube channel, which is at StrongFit, and on Instagram at StrongFit1. And I have a two-day-a-week template that I'm going to put out very soon to help with CrossFitters and everything to incorporate some of the movement I talk about all the time. And then I'm going to do a set of seminars in Europe this summer. And I'm going to try to go after that to Australia, Latin America, and different places. So I'm going to try to, what I would like to do is to create a field for the movement specialists out there that are trying to do what I do, but don't have necessarily a structure to do it. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to try to make this bigger.
That's phenomenal, man. I mean, your philosophy on life and coaching really hit home for me. So
that's awesome.
I'm looking forward to learning more from you.
Cool. That's awesome.
I appreciate you making the time to do this.
My pleasure.
Guys, you can find me at Michael Cazieux. That's CazayouX on Instagram, Twitter, etc. And then if you're not already subscribed to our newsletter, go to brutestrengthtraining.com, sign up for that. We'll let you know about all the new podcasts, resources, programs coming out, etc. Thanks again, man. We'll talk soon.
My pleasure. Talk to you soon.